The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to the How to Kill an Hour Hour, the half-hour edition brought to you by Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care. And now, without further ado, here's your host for the next 30 minutes, the one, the only, the Ed-Man.
Oh yeah, welcome once again to the How to Kill an Hour radio show, and I am your host, the man with a plan, the Ed-Man, here to give you the news for the past week, and welcome everybody to our Halloween special. Now, today is the 3rd of November, Saturday, the 3rd of November, so it is past Halloween. But the reason I'm having a Halloween special today is because I'm going to be going over an interview that Hillary Clinton had earlier this week. And believe me, it's far more frightening than anything that you saw on October 31st. And if you don't believe me, those sound effects that you just heard, let me break them down for you. I had a pipe organ in the background. I did the wolf howl. Pretty good. Now, I used a sound effect called Evil Laugh. And the final sound effect was provided by Hillary Clinton. It was her actual laugh. I mean, if that doesn't shake you to the core, you are a stronger man than me. Let me play them all together. I love how the Evil Laugh sound effect pales in comparison to Hillary Clinton's actual laugh. I mean, it's no contest at all. Hillary ought to go into some kind of voice acting or something, because that is just amazing. You can almost hear the sound of oppressed children in her cackle. Like, one of these soul-absorbing creatures. She just has it in her voice. No Halloween display has ever had a better evil laugh than the actual laugh of Hillary Clinton. And if her laugh wasn't enough to make your hair stand up on end, listen to this exchange. So this is Kara Swisher talking to Hillary Clinton about 2020. And just listen to the whole thing here. Oh, man. I feel for you guys. You know, I've already been through the pain, but, well, here it is.
We're going to talk about 2020 in a minute. Do you want to run again?
No.
Wait.
No.
That was a pause.
Well, I'd like to be president.
Okay. Sorry, that was me. I couldn't hold it in.
Look, I think, hopefully, when we have a Democrat in the Oval Office in January of 2021, there's going to be so much work to be done. I mean, we have confused everybody in the world, including ourselves. And we have confused our friends and our enemies.
Right.
They have no idea what the United States stands for, what we're likely to do, what we think is important. So the work would be work that I feel very well prepared for, having been in the Senate for 8 years, having been a diplomat in the State Department. And it's just going to be a lot of heavy lifting.
So are you going to be doing any of that lifting? Do you feel like...
Oh, I have no idea, Kara, but I'm going to... You know, I'm not going to even think about it until we get through this November 6th election about what's going to happen after that.
Can you believe this? You know... My girlfriend said, obviously she's going to run. Now, I don't know. Call it women's intuition. Maybe she has some kind of lie radar detector that I don't have. Whether it's because she's a lady or whether it's because she's just smarter than me. No, that's not possible. But whatever the reason was, she did say she's going to run again like a long time ago. She swore that Hillary Clinton was going to run again. I said, "Do you think so?" She goes, "Of course. Of course she's going to run again." And, you know, after the 2016 election, it was so brutal. And I know that Hillary Clinton is more brutal than anything that you could put up against her. You know, she laughs about killing people. I'm sorry. Did you think that I was mistaken about that? Here she is talking about the death of Gaddafi.
So, I mean, that is the land of unconfirmed.
Yes, we came, we saw, he died.
Yes, war and violent death. Hee hee ha ha ho ho ho. Okay, well, anyway, as brutal as Hillary Clinton is, that election, I thought that, you know, somebody just wouldn't want to touch that again, especially if there was a possibility of losing. But, you know, there's so much negative press against Trump. I think she thinks that she's got a chance again. And she has been kind of in the running. Now, like I said, my girlfriend had thought that she was going to do this the whole time. But I think she changed her mind recently. Now, she's obviously testing the waters. As a matter of fact, even this little clip that you heard just now, when the interviewer said to her, "Do you want to run again?" And she said no, almost instantly. The interviewer was confused and said no, and then said there was a pause there. Well, the reason she was confused is because the interviewer talked to her the day before. They already had a whole conversation about what they were going to talk about. As usual, the press will do whatever Hillary Clinton wants them to do. And earlier in the conversation, the interviewer was very open. I think the same way that sometimes if you admit a fault, if you're very open about it, you know, people are forgiving about it or they don't think about it, they kind of just let it go. Well, the interviewer admitted that she had talked the other day and met with her the day before about the interview. Hillary Clinton's body language to me made it seem like she didn't really care for the interviewer divulging that information. I think, of course, Hillary Clinton would like people to think that everything is kind of off the cuff. And if you know that they had talked the previous day about what they were going to discuss, her answers seem much less genuine and much more rehearsed when you look at it in that light. So when the interviewer said to her, "Do you want to run again?" Hillary Clinton, from the confusion that the interviewer had, the way that she didn't expect Hillary Clinton to answer in that way, I think Hillary Clinton had given her an answer the day before that would lead the interviewer to believe that she did want to run again. And that's why you had the confusion. So I'm going to play the beginning of that clip again. And, you know, the first time you hear it, you kind of don't notice these little details. But listen to when Hillary says that she doesn't want to run again, how the reporter seems confused.
We're going to talk about 2020 in a minute. Do you want to run again?
No.
Wait.
No.
That was a pause.
Well, I'd like to be president.
Okay.
So you hear that? So I think Hillary Clinton was testing for audience reaction. Of course, she's in front of a friendly audience. And when she said that she didn't want to run again, the audience was like, oh, they were very disappointed about it. And so I think she's sending out these little testers to see. She's floating these ideas, seeing how people respond to them. And Hillary Clinton's ego is as big or bigger than Donald Trump's. Of course, they go about it different ways, so it doesn't seem like that. But Hillary Clinton doesn't want to lose, you know. Donald Trump, I think he could take a loss better than she could, actually. And so that's one of the reasons why I thought she was, you know, going to be done. But she wants to be president so badly. And could you imagine how much of a boost to her ego it would be if she actually overcame all the odds and became the first female president? She just broke through that glass ceiling. So, man, I worry she's gonna just run for president every 4 years until just the end of time. But if she doesn't think she's in a friendly climate, and it's hard to convince her otherwise because of the bubble that she's in, you know, she lives with these people who are puffing her up. So if she thinks she has a chance, she is going to run. And she is one of the most calculating human beings on the planet, you know. So if she thinks that the odds are favorable, she will do it. So I hope the public just lets her know we want you as far away from the political arena in all ways, everything from endorsements to even commenting on politics. Please, please stay away. And then her little, you know, computer mind will make the calculation, I have no chance, and will drop out. And like I said, she is calculating. Here's a clip of her admitting that you have to be calculating in order to be in politics.
The calculations, the thinking that you have to make as a politician oftentimes, you know, pushes you to compromise, forces you to have to, you know, ally yourself with people that you agree with one time out of 100. There's just a lot that goes into it. You know, it is the making of sausage.
You know, it's so funny because our idea of a politician is that we want somebody who sticks to their principles, and that it's a good set of principles that the majority of Americans agree with, right? And yet you have this lady here who calls this the making of sausage. You know, so that expression is that no one wants to see how sausage is made. They all like the sausage, but they don't want to see how it's made. In other words, saying that all of this is hidden and should be hidden. You know, she's just one of the most devious people, the complete opposite of what we would want in office. And we don't want her anywhere near that thing. Wow, that is just frightening. And, you know, Democrats in general are very calculating. And you can see this in the way that they treat minorities. You know, it's kind of funny because you always hear about how Democrats are, they care about people. Well, I think a lot of the base does. I think a lot of the base does care. I also think a lot of them see their caring as a way to be exalted by people of color, and that they don't actually think, you know, they talk about subconscious bias and that everyone has subconscious bias. They have subconscious bias, right? Because they see minorities, they see people of color as, I don't know if subhuman is the right word, but as children, as less of a person than they are. They see them as being just these helpless kind of nobodies, and they're speaking on the behalf of the powerless. They even use that word, the powerless. You know, we're not talking about people who are downtrodden and, you know, they have a physical or a mental disability and they can't get work. They're talking about normal people. You know, normal people that are just a different color than they are. Now, I'm talking about the base. Now, the base, you know, is kind of has these problems. But the politicians themselves see people of color as complete, total pawns. I mean, this is why they try to gin up claims of racism every second that they can. And you can see this in the race that's happening right now with DeSantis and Gillum. And it's too bad because, you know, Andrew Gillum, he is a pretty good politician, not as far as anything that I would want near the office. I mean, I disagree with his stances and opinions on everything. And to have somebody who's governor, I mean, they control the money, right? He will put Florida into the toilet. But, I mean, as a politician goes, I think he could win based on his rhetoric without having to go into the identity politic. I think he could just win kind of cleanly, right? But they all use this playbook of racism, misogyny, and it's funny because they use it like a cover, right? Like a shield. And they can do the worst, most nasty, most terrible things, but it's all the press covers when they call their opponent a racist. Or as in the case of Gillum, well, I'm not saying he's a racist, but the racist thinks he's a racist. What a great way to call someone a racist and say that you're not the one doing it, right? And I can't, and it's, and you know, Ron DeSantis, he might be a great man, I don't know. I mean, he might be a terrible man. I don't know him personally. But, I mean, you know, the way that he will run things as governor, I think, would be much better than Gillum. But Ron DeSantis is not as good with words. He is not as fast on his feet as Andrew Gillum is. And I can't believe how he kind of puts up with being called these things. To if somebody says the racists think you're a racist, that is very hard to disprove, isn't it? Because that is no one is making the actual accusation of you being a racist, right? So very, very clever. It's kind of like when the Democrats say, like, well, everyone deserves a living wage, right? Well, I mean, who's going to argue with that? How can you say somebody doesn't deserve a living wage, right? So then it follows that, well, a living wage is $15 an hour or, you know, whatever they want to pretend it should be. And so then you're a terrible person and think that people don't deserve a living wage if you don't make it $15 an hour. It would be like voting against the Patriot Act, right? You call something the Patriot Act, and now suddenly you've got to vote for it, or you're not a patriot. You know, so the politicians are the best, right, at using the words. Well, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe the rich businessmen are, because Trump, Trump got in there first try. You know, not a standard politician. Didn't make a living doing it. He just he was able to fight his way in. So maybe the politicians are the second best at using language. And you have your salespeople still at number one, right? They deserve it. And it's amazing that Trump won, because you have the press so overwhelmingly in favor, now becoming not even hiding it anymore. They really think it's okay to just come out and call the president a liar and say these terrible things about him, and even call his base racist very casually. Here's Don Lemon from earlier this week.
We have to stop demonizing people and realize the biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right, up to the right.
I mean, this guy, that's Don Lemon. He works for CNN. I mean, and then he doubled down on the comments later. So it's really become okay for these news organizations to say outrageous things like this. It's just astonishing to me that people are all right with this. And I love the normal Democrat modus operandi, which is, you know, you punch someone in the face and you're like, stop hitting me, stop hurting me, you know, stop hurting my fists with your face. He says, we need to stop demonizing people and realize the problem in the country is white men. I mean, can you demonize someone any harder than that? Hillary Clinton did the exact same thing in the same talk that you just heard. This is her saying we need to stop demagoguing, and then calls Trump Mussolini.
When you use the word demagogue,
mm-hmm.
Trump to you is a demagogue.
Absolutely. And where Mussolini, a demagogue, an authoritarian, who used that kind of rhetoric, who inflamed the passions of thugs on the street, who beat up, intimidated, and eventually murdered political opponents, members of the press, and the like. Mussolini says, you know, when you pluck a chicken feather by feather, nobody notices. Well, I think we now notice. I mean, how can we not notice?
And that's it. I mean, it's that easy to go off the deep end. And the press will cover up for her, no matter what she does or no matter what she says. Now, could you imagine if Trump, as a joke, if Trump was just joking and he said that, talking about black people, if Trump said they all look alike. Now, could imagine what would happen if Trump said that, okay? Just think of the press, the nonstop coverage that would get, even if he said it as a joke. Now, here's an exchange between the interviewer and Hillary Clinton. And the interviewer mixes up former Attorney General Eric Holder with Cory Booker. Now, I realize that they're both black, okay? But they look nothing alike. But the interviewer is a liberal, and to the liberal mind, they see black people as just one giant mass, right? They just go, oh, that person's black. They don't see a person. They see the race. So the interviewer mixes these two people up. Then Hillary Clinton comes in and says, they all look alike. Which for anybody else would be a massive faux pas. But then the interviewer comes in and lamely tries to save Hillary Clinton. Listen to this garbage.
What do you think of Cory Booker's, and you didn't come on him, and you're feel free
to... I adore him.
What do you think about him saying, kick them in the shins, essentially, start to get to that kind of political...
Well, that was Eric Holder.
Yeah, Eric Holder,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know they all look alike.
No, they don't. Oh, well done. You know, Hillary...
Yeah, I was paid by Mark Zuckerberg to do that.
Okay. Can I just say...
No, what I
can I just say you've been reading Trump's tweets beautifully.
Yeah, thank you.
So Hillary Clinton says an idiot thing like that and then says that she was paid by Mark Zuckerberg to say that, which is kind of bizarre. There was a reference to him at the beginning of the interview, but it's not really relevant in any way, shape, or form here. And then the moron interviewer says, may I say you've been reading Trump's tweets beautifully, is what she said. That's unbelievable. And everyone's just okay with it. You know, I mean, these people are such trash. I'll play the clip again. It's insane.
What do you think of Cory Booker's, and you didn't come on him, and you feel free?
I adore him.
What do you think about him saying, kick them in the shins, essentially, start to get to that kind of political...
Well, that was Eric Holder.
Yeah, Eric Holder,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know they all look alike.
No, they don't. Oh, well done. You know, Hillary...
Yeah, I was paid by Mark Zuckerberg to do that.
Okay. Can I just say...
No, what I
can I just say you've been reading Trump's tweets beautifully.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, it's funny because people on the right aren't going to get bent out of shape about a dumb joke. But it does illustrate the hypocrisy that these Democrats have. And if you want to see what they really think, you know, you get little glimpses into their worldview sometimes. Here's another one. This is another Democrat earlier trying to explain how great he is because he has a diverse staff. Listen to this idiot. Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly.
We want everybody to have a chance in Indiana and in America. And my offices reflect that, both on the campaign side and on the Senate side. Our state director is Indian American, but he does an amazing job.
Guys, that is just comedy gold. My goodness. Now, you think that maybe the guy, he's just messed up. Heck, maybe he's nervous being up on the podium or something like that. But he keeps on going. All right, I'm going to play it from that section again. This guy's such a dummy.
Our state director is Indian American, but he does an amazing job. Our director of all constituent services, she's African American, but she does an even more incredible job than you could ever imagine. It isn't their race or their religion. It's the incredible person that they are. But at the same time, they have to have a chance. They have to have an opportunity. And that's my responsibility. And I've done it in every office I've had, and I've done it in every campaign I've had, because my campaigns and our Senate office should reflect the face of Indiana.
Let me give that guy a golf clap for just caring so much about the poor downtrodden brown people. Thank you so much, Joe Donnelly, for giving us a chance. That is fantastic. You know, I didn't even get a chance to bring up Ben and Jerry's new ice cream, Resist flavored ice cream in resistance of the president. Just amazing what's going on. We'll see what happens in the midterms. Guys, thanks for joining me. I'm the Ed Man. This is the How to Kill an Hour radio show, and we'll see you all again next week. Have a good one, everybody.